Hey everyone, thanks for listening. That's going to bring us to the end of One Dynamic System Radio for today. I'll be here next Wednesday again at 10 o'clock. Next up, we've got Don with Friendly Fire. Before we get to that, we're just going to read a quick announcement. WMPG Community Radio is grateful for support from listeners and from Brad's Bike Rental Shop on Peaks Island. It's 4 miles, less than 1 hour, to pedal around the island. The natural beauty of Peaks and the cafes and beaches are accessible by bicycle. Brad's Bikes Rental is open 7 days a week from 10 to 6 and can be reached at 766-5631. That's 766-5631. It's been a pleasure to play this music for you today. Next up, Friendly Fire with Don. Here we go.
This is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. 17 years in the making, Soviet-born writer Lena Nelsa has written a book detailing the inspiring but ultimately tragic story of a young anti-nuclear activist and actor, Samantha Smith. At just 10 years old, Samantha challenged the most powerful men on Earth about nuclear war and traveled to the Kremlin to work for peace. We'll talk with the author from her home in California. Stay tuned. That's John Farnham with You're the Voice. Welcome to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. I'm your host, Don Kimball. Pleasure to have you along today. We are recording from a remote location we call the Sacred Feather Studios, and we're very happy to be on WMPG FM 90.9 Gorham, Portland, or on the web at WMPG.org. And now let's go to our previously recorded conversation. Today we're very proud and pleased to have Miss Lena Nelsa. She's calling us from San Diego, California. Lena is the author of a new book that's out called America's Youngest Ambassador, the Cold War story of Samantha Smith's lasting message of peace. Lena is a writer, a teacher, a citizen historian who has spent 17 years researching and documenting the story of Samantha Smith and creating www.samanthasmith.info. The online archive of news articles and videos about Samantha. She was a nominee for the Allegra Johnson Prize and has worked with numerous news, educational, and humanitarian organizations around the whole world. She has a degree in international studies and linguistics and lives with her family in San Diego. Well, Lena, thanks so much for coming on Friendly Fire. Great to see you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
I really enjoyed the book. You were the same age as Samantha when you were growing up in then the USSR?
I was 3 years younger. I was 7 and she was 10 when she first wrote her letter.
Your grandmother, who you dearly loved, who took care of you while your parents were working, and who first alerted you to Samantha's story, right?
Correct. Yes, it was my grandmother who read about it in the newspaper, and she was so enchanted with the story that she thought it would be nice to share with me. And she said that, you know, there was this American girl who wrote a letter to the Soviet leader. And it's the question that's kind of surprised me is when Samantha asked, are the Soviets going to start a war, a nuclear war? And I remember thinking that this was such a strange question, because in the Soviet Union, of course, we were taught that it was the Americans that were going to start the nuclear war. And it was, you know, the President Ronald Reagan that had his, you know, finger on that button that scared us. when my grandmother also told me that Samantha received a response to that question, I thought that was so strange that she got that question was acknowledged and that question was answered. And on top of it, she got invited to the Soviet camp Artek, which was back then like a Disneyland for a Soviet child. So I thought, what a strange question to ask, and then to get rewarded for it with a trip to Disneyland. So that piqued my interest as a seven-year-old. I thought that was a very odd situation.
Yes, I did get from the book that there was a little bit of a young girl childhood envy that, hey, who's this American coming over here and taking a spot in a camp where, you know, maybe I should be. But of course, you know, you said in the book that you weren't the straight A student that it took to be able to get selected for this camp, very selected, but you were an athlete in training and you were a skater aspiring for the Olympics. Did you ever, you didn't say anything in the book, but did you make it to the Olympic trials?
No. At the age of 9, I had an accident and I quit skating. But yeah, I was, for many years, in fact, up until I started working on the book, I thought it was just, you know, I was initially envious of Samantha. But I think really, as I've worked on the book, I realized that it was more of a confusion, you know, in that there was one story being told to us in the Soviet Union that Americans are the enemy. And then at the same time, here, the Soviet leader is acknowledging this American girl, her very strange question, you know, the Soviets want to start a nuclear war, and then rewarding that question. So I think those two stories just didn't really sync for me. And that made me kind of question the whole situation.
Yeah. I can see why you would be questioning that, because, you know, the U.S. and the USSR had these propaganda machines where they were both trying to make the other side look bad. And, you know, it didn't take a lot of work to make the other sides look bad, because, you know, both countries were doing things and continue to that are not in keeping with world peace. But I think what really captivated you from what I read in the book was Samantha's Gagarin smile. And for folks who don't remember Yuri Gagarin, he was the first human being in space, a USSR, that launched Yuri into space. He did one orbit around the Earth in April of 1961. And you mentioned her Gagarin smile, and that really captivated you, right?
Right, yes. She had this bright smile that we kind of talked about as Gagarin's smile, because it was sparkly, you know, all teeth. And seeing that, you know, again, I don't, as a child, I guess we didn't, we can't say the Soviets didn't smile. Of course, we smiled, but to see such a big, bright smile was really, I guess, amazing at some point, that somebody was, you know, that happy all the time.
You know, a smile is the international language, isn't it? I mean, you don't have to speak another person's language, but the smile really says it all. One of the bad things about COVID, of course, was you couldn't see, you know, people smile. Like, a lot of times I'd look at people and say, I'm smiling under this. And then they would kind of, you know, laugh or giggle. And yeah, but the smile is definitely the international language, although Samantha did try to learn a little Russian before she came to the USSR. So the smile captivated you. And then your grandmother, whose name is
Baba is short for babushka. And in the North, we do use babushka, but when I would refer to my grandma, I would always say Baba and then her name. So maybe something in the States would be Nana something. So,
okay. So if I say Nana or Baba or babushka,
grandma is fine. Grandma is fine. Grandma.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, just say grandma. So your grandma continued to become somewhat obsessed with this, like probably a lot of Russian people were. Like, who is this young girl that has the audacity to write to our leader and then be invited to the Soviet Union? And you continued to follow the case. And why don't you tell us how Samantha got invited to the Soviet Union, please?
So Samantha wrote her letter in the fall of 1982. And the letter, once it got to Moscow, somehow ended up being printed in the Soviet newspaper Pravda. And that was part of a kind of a long-standing confrontation between the U.S. and Soviet media at the time. A few months earlier in February, there was a batch of letters printed, a batch of letters from the West printed in the Soviet newspaper. They quoted these Western correspondents saying how they were thanking Yuri Andropov for his efforts for peace. And of course, the American press went out and tried to connect and, you know, fact check, and they couldn't find any of the people. So they accused the Soviets of manufacturing the names. So in April, when Samantha's letter was included in the batch of letters printed, they decided to take a photograph of the pile of letters. And so the Soviets took a picture, and for whatever reason, Samantha's letter was on the very top of that pile with her name, you know, visible. And that's when she got a call at Manchester Elementary School. And they asked her, did you write the letter to the Soviet leader? And that kind of, you know, took off from there. When the Smiths were able to locate the Pravda newspaper, they discovered that in the text, Samantha was kind of ridiculed a little bit, where they said, well, we can forgive Samantha for her question. She's only 10 years old. And that did not sit well with her. So she wanted the response, and she decided to write to the Soviet ambassador in Washington, D.C., Anatoly Dobrynin, who then, I guess, was able to facilitate a response from Yuri Andropov. And that is how she received the letter, and with that, an invitation to visit the Soviet Union. And then that summer is when she traveled with her family to the Soviet Union.
It's almost like a fairy tale, isn't it? How this
I know.
All kind of transpired. Yeah, there was some kind of magic here that had all these events transpire. And, you know, Samantha, just to back up a bit, as you said, she's 10 years old. She was from Manchester, Maine. She's in elementary school. I mean, basically, here's a young girl from the woods of Maine who becomes an international overnight sensation. And she was a natural at it. She was just absolutely a natural. We mentioned her smile, and she never lost that smile. And you say many times in the book, which I loved, and it made me cry sometimes, and it made me laugh also, that she was just a natural in front of the cameras. That people were amazed, and I can remember in the book, I can't remember what reporter it was, saying that she was covering the story, and that Samantha made her kind of look unprofessional. And this is an adult woman who'd been in journalism for quite a while. And she said, Samantha, even when she had to do the head turn, going from one camera to another, and sometimes that can be a little awkward for the journalist, boom, first take, she just did it. So she writes the letter. She initially didn't get a response from Yuri Andropov, but she was persistent and then wrote to the Soviet ambassador to the United States, for the United Nations, I can't remember which, and then the ball started to get rolling, right?
Right. She wrote to Ambassador Dobrynin and then received a response from Yuri Andropov. And in that letter, he invited her to the Soviet Union in the summer. And that is when, you know, that night she was on the plane to New York to be on all these TV shows. She was on Nightline live on national TV that very night. And she did amazingly well. I mean, even her parents were shocked by how well she did. Just a few months prior to that, she was too shy to audition for a school play. So the fact that she, you know, really, I guess, believed in what she did, and that gave her confidence, and she somehow found her voice because she really was amazing. Even later on in the trip, the diplomat who was their interpreter, the Soviet diplomat who was her interpreter, mentioned how impressed she was with her presence, her ability to connect with people, that she said that, you know, even some diplomats could have learned from her. She was indeed a great, great, great at communicating.
That was Natasha, who was her translator, and they ended up being friends.
Yeah, Natalia Batova. There were two Natashas. Natasha, they later became known as the little Natasha and the big Natasha. Little was the girl who was her friend in the summer camp. And then Natalia Batova was the translator who traveled with them from day one throughout the trip.
Finally, Samantha's letter is read, and the Soviet higher powers decide, hey, let's invite her over here and her family, and was a very open, generous move by the Soviet government to do something like that. The United States government really didn't know what to think. And on page 64 of your book, you said, while there was no official comment from the White House, Samantha's home state's governing body had a lot to say about her correspondence with the Soviet leader. United States Senator George Mitchell sent her a personal letter from Washington, D.C., and Senator Mitchell was a senator from Maine at the time. So really, the government was kind of quiet about these things. This is the administration of Ronald Reagan. And, you know, Ronald Reagan, even though he did sign a peace agreement with Gorbachev later on in Reykjavik, really an enigma, I think, because, you know, once before a speech in October of 1984, while they were testing the mic, Reagan said this, quote, "I've signed legislation to outlaw Russia forever. We begin launching in 5 minutes," unquote. This actually sent the Soviet Union into a red alert. And even though this was supposed to be a joke, this is the most powerful person in the whole world, was caught live and could have started a nuclear flagration right then and there. So the U.S. government was quiet about it. Samantha and her family went to the Soviet Union. And I found this, it was very interesting. I don't think a lot of people knew this, Lena, that Aeroflot at the time was not flying to the United States. So Samantha and her family, Arthur and Jane, her parents, the three of them had to drive to Montreal to take a flight from Montreal to Moscow.
They had to fly from Boston to Montreal. Yes, but they couldn't, there was no direct flights from the United States to the Soviet Union at the time. You're right.
Wow. And it was this a political thing that I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, I guess this was, you know, one of those reciprocity things. You know, you can fly directly from either of the countries to the other one. So you had to take a roundabout way to travel. Yes.
But it just made their trip a little bit longer, but they did arrive in the Soviet Union to great fanfare. They had a limousine, they had police escorts, they stayed at the nicest hotel that was reserved for diplomats that were coming to visit, and the Soviet Union was putting their best foot forward to welcome Samantha and her family. So now you're following all this, you and Nana are following all this, and how were you feeling about this? You really must have been excited when she finally got there, and how did that play out?
So about the time that Samantha went to the Soviet Union, I traveled to a Soviet camp. So I got to Soviet camp, and I have to say Soviet summer camp, because we had two kinds of camps. That was a children's camp. And so I didn't get to see a whole lot of the trip, just little bits here and there. And my grandmother saved newspaper articles for me. And she was really into the trip. And it was filmed sort of like a travelogue. Every evening there would be a little tidbit in the news saying Samantha Smith today went to the Red Square, or today Samantha Smith toured this Pioneer Palace, or she visited this. So every evening the Soviet citizens would get this little insight as to what this American girl was doing. And sometimes I would catch a glimpse of it in the camp. But mostly it was the newspaper articles that my grandma saved for me from the 2 weeks that the Smiths spent in the Soviet Union. And yeah, it was, I think for a lot of Soviets, it was just like the first look they had at an American family, because you have to imagine the level of isolation that we had. No American movies, no Western movies. There was a period in the 60s where there was some foreign film. So we had like some Italian films, some French films that came through, but not by the time I was a child. And we really did not know what an American was. And I remember when I first saw Samantha on TV, I thought to myself, she looks just like myself. And as an adult, I thought, I wonder what I expected an American to look like, you know, like Uncle Sam or some alien, because we really did not see Americans, and especially my generation of children, because the isolation by then was, you know, pretty, pretty tight.
You grew up, were you north of the Arctic Circle? Because you grew up in a place called Archangel?
Just a little below the Arctic Circle, yes.
But during the summer, I remember reading in the book that you never, it was always some amount of light. It never got really dark for months,
white nights. And
I can remember also you saying in the book when you saw where Samantha lived for the first time on TV, and you were really amazed at the difference between grew up in and that Samantha grew up in, but yet you still felt a real kinship with her because of her smile and the way that she held herself. And so you had to go to a pioneer camp, I believe it was, and this is really incredible, and this is one of the things about the book that I loved, is it took me back to my days of going to camp. You know, I never really think about it, but you know, it really made me think how that helps a young person go from being a child into adulthood, because you're kind of on your own. There's still a leash, but you're kind of on your own. And now here's Samantha, even though she's traveling with her family, she's going to a foreign country, doesn't speak the language, and is going there with people who don't speak her language, but yet everything went just swimmingly, I guess you could say, since they were at a camp. So she got to go to the very best camp for the elite of Soviet Union, Artek camp. And you went to, for how many days was it? 45 days. And you took wasn't it a 3-day train trip to get there?
It was a 3-day train trip. Yes.
So, you know, my parents drove me there, so at least I didn't have that trauma of 3 days on a train. Of course, you're with, you know, the counselors and the other girls and stuff. Now, you develop friendships at this camp. So the first time going, nobody knew anybody, but after that, you look forward to it because you were seeing old friends again. How many years did you do the camp for?
I did that. It wasn't all the same camp, but that particular camp, I think I did probably for 5 years. And then I went to camp every single year of my school experience, except for 1 year when I traveled with my family to Estonia. And for some reason, I just thought camp was so much better. And after I went with my family once, I'm like, no, I think I'll go to camp next year. And I did every single summer. One summer we did what was known back then in the Soviet Union as the camp of labor and rest, where we also, as teenagers, we were expected to work on a local farm. We made a little bit of money from that experience. But yeah, camps were something that I enjoyed, and that's something that I passed on to my children. My kids spent almost every summer, although not 45 days, but in a camp.
It's a long time to be away. I think the longest I was away was for 3 weeks. You know, maybe the folks even came and visited because I was only about an hour and a half away. Now, here you are 3 days away by train, so you know you're not going to see anybody. Wow. If you've just joined us, our guests today, we're very proud and pleased to have Lena Nelson with us. Lena is the author of America's Youngest Ambassador, a new book that's just come out, The Cold War Story of Samantha Smith's Lasting Message of Peace. This book was 17 years in the works, and you said, Lena, that you never thought that you were going to be a writer, that you were going to do something like this. And describe the process that led you to publishing this wonderful book.
So in 2003, well, actually, I should start probably a little early. In 1985, when Samantha was killed in the crash, I started a scrapbook about her. And that scrapbook traveled to the States with me when I moved into the United States in 1995. And then in 2003, my mother came to visit me in the States, and we got to talking about my grandma, who had passed away by then, and Samantha Smith. And I thought, you know, well, I'm going to look her up online and see if there was anything about her. And I discovered that at the time, there was just a small mention of her on a sister city website. And I thought, how strange, you know, a story that was so big on both sides of the ocean just disappeared. So I thought someone needs to make a website about her, and I had no idea how to make websites. So instead I wrote a letter to Samantha's mother, Jane, because that sister city website had an address to the Samantha Smith Foundation. And surprisingly, Jane answered. and thanked me for, you know, writing and said something like, you know, do you know that this Arkhangelsk and Portland, Maine have a sister city relationship? And of course I knew that because some of those kids actually were part of a delegation that visited my high school. So I thought there was a kind of an interesting connection there. And so by 2005, I figured out how to make websites, and I made the website samanthasmith.info and started collecting. That scrapbook that I did in 1985 became a part of the collection of articles. And then all of a sudden, people from everywhere started coming out of the woodwork and sending me articles they had. And there were so many kids my age that kept scrapbooks about Samantha, both in the United States and the Soviet Union. And so slowly I assembled this fairly large archive of the media. And then with time, Jane shared images from her family archive, the newspapers that she had saved. And my hope through all of this was that, you know, somebody would come along and write an academic article about her, kind of recognizing her contribution to the betterment of the Soviet-American relations, but also that maybe somebody would write a book as well. There were several books written, but mostly for children, fairly short. But I thought, you know, a deeper exploration would have been more interesting. It's such a wonderful story. And I remember in 2013, 30 years kind of after Samantha's trip to the Soviet Union, Jane said, she looked at the website and she said, you have enough here to write a book and you'd be a perfect person to do it. You have the perspectives of both sides. And of course, you know, I'd never written a book before and I didn't take her seriously at the time. I thought, a website is already a pretty involved hobby. So again, it took me a couple of years, but by 2015, when no one showed interest in the book length manuscript, is when I enrolled in creative nonfiction classes at the UCLA Writers Program. And another 2 years went by and my manuscript was nominated for the Allegra Johnson Prize in Memoir. So I thought, well, maybe not only is, I knew there was a story, I just didn't know if I was had the chops to write it. And then, yeah, with time, I was able to sell my proposal to Downey's Books. And yeah, the book came out this June 1.
Jane was right that you should write. And another thing that really fascinated me about the book was not only did we get to know Samantha so much better, but we also got to know Jane and Arthur. And, you know, the story isn't anything without them, of course, because Samantha was their child. And tragically, of course, Arthur died in the plane crash with Samantha in 1985, which we'll get to. And Jane continues to live in Maine and is still very active with keeping her daughter's legacy alive. And there's probably been no greater contribution to keeping Samantha's legacy alive than your book. And you must be so very proud of this. And now you said you have children of your own, do you?
I do. I have a son and a daughter.
And how do they feel about how you feel about Samantha? Do they feel the same way, or have they done a book report?
Well, you know, they are in their 20s now, but they grew up with that story basically, because in 2005 is when I started the website, and there were young when we traveled for the first time to Maine and saw the statue, and they met Jane and they were very patient, you know, sitting around as I was going through the old archives and photographs. And the story is important to them. And in fact, my daughter did do a book report or story on Samantha for one of her high school presentations. So yeah, that story is part of their lives as well.
So Samantha goes to summer camp. She has a wonderful time there. The press is following her everywhere, but by and large, the visit was a huge success, even though she did not get to visit with the Soviet premier, who said that he was not feeling well. And indeed, he did die less than a year later. He was on dialysis at the time, but I guess some of his advisors and it told him that it would not be a good visual for this older gentleman who was in the degenerative stage of his life to be seen next to this vibrant young girl, her whole life in front of her. So they didn't get to meet, but still, I think everybody agreed it was a huge success. She comes back, the family comes back to the United States, and